Oh, shit. This is... Oh, maybe... Oh,
by the way, I know. Hashtag 50.
This is our 50th episode.
Yeah.
Did you ever think we'd make it to 50?
No, I really thought one of us would murder the other, like, by episode 6, minimum.
And the other, like, I don't know. I think I made a joke of...
You know, don't be sincere right now.
Oh, fuck, I'm not being sincere. Like, I would never be sincere with you on air. It's just not my style. But I remember at the beginning, you know, for a long time, I was just like, it's a thing we joke about. We're not going to actually do it. When we start to do it, and we're like, holy shit, we're actually committed. We're going to make this happen. And I said, I commit to at least trying like 20 episodes with you.
Yeah.
Because we had talked about there's going to be a learning curve. It's going to be rough. But here we are fucking 50 episodes almost a year later.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is we're no better than it's only gotten worse. Welcome to Subscurity, the podcast about obscure subcultures. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Brenna. And today we're talking about tablescaping. So during the holidays, like Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Those are holidays, yeah.
Et al., e.g., i.e., Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah. Do you bust out like nice plates and table settings and like do a centerpiece and all that?
Like the fine china.
Yeah, exactly.
I never did that. Growing up, we did that, I think. Like, we had some nice stuff. But looking back, I don't remember why, like, how they were nicer than the normal stuff. You know, they were slightly better porcelain, maybe. I don't know. My wife likes to decorate the table, like, and put a centerpiece and a nice tablecloth and whatever else. But we don't really have...
different plates or table settings.
We have a nice like serving plate, especially for Thanksgiving, like, and a nice gravy boat and things like that, right?
Yep.
But it's less of a this is the nice one so much as this is the one we have. You don't usually have a gravy boat out other times of the year in my experience, right? So we just, that's the one that gets out, but it feels nicer because it's that a special occasion, I guess.
So you don't have like it doesn't sound like an extra set of plates. Like, I know there are people who bust out the plates just for the holidays, or they have guest towels and they have their nicer towels. Mm-hmm. They're the nicer set of things, but then it just begs the question of like, you never use the nice things except once or twice a year. So it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, we definitely, like, we don't have, I don't think, first of all, we have the space in our house for like two sets of everything.
Yeah.
For our like guest bed, which is not nicer because as you've slept on it, it is a pull-out couch. It's a nice pull-out couch, to be fair. It's got like a memory foamish, shallow, but technically memory foamish kind of mattress.
Is that how they advertised it? Memory foam-ish? Nice for a pull-out couch?
Listen, Crate and Barrel makes some fantastic sleepers. So it's nice, but it's not the most comfortable thing ever, I'm sure you would attest to. But we do have nice guest pillows because when my brother was coming over to stay with us, we realized we didn't really have any extra pillows that first time. And so my wife bought like some nice king size, like Casper pillows, which were way too expensive because that was all that Target had in stock that day. My brother was going to be there that night.
Was this when you went to the wedding recently, like 2 weeks ago?
Are you saying because you haven't gotten to experience those?
I was
saying,
I don't know why, like the first time I dog sat or house sat years, plural, ago, it didn't prompt you, oh, we don't have nice pillows for our guests.
So let me rephrase. We did have extra pillows. What we did not have, we had an extra pillow, basically. My brother and his wife were going to be staying with us.
I have sex with strangers all the time at your house when you're gone. And you never think about their head... comfort.
Don't talk to me about their head.
Comfort.
Where are we going with this?
Oh, yes.
Is there a topic or we just...
I forgot. So yes, I think I texted you when I was landing after the trip I got back from Monday, this past weekend? Time is blurred together. That I watched a documentary on my most recent plane ride.
Oh, you did say that.
And it would be the topic of an upcoming episode. And guess what? That episode is happening right now.
That's amazing. I can't wait to talk about Elon Musk because I know you love that documentary so much.
Oh, God. I would rather gouge my eye out with a rusty fork.
And I have volunteered to do that for you. I don't want to make you go through that effort.
So I watched a documentary called Set.
Set, like setting tables.
Like setting tables. You nailed it. You're
I'm a genius.
You are a genius. So it came out in 2021, so it's pretty current. And really, I want to spend the entirety of the podcast talking about this specific documentary. Yes, I have some extra articles I read. but the documentary itself was so fascinating to me. Like, it really just does such a great job of crafting a narrative and telling a story. Like, I was really sucked in on the plane. And I've watched, I would say, a fair amount of documentaries for this podcast, like for the Poultry Show, Noodling, Competitive Tickling, and they've been fine. Sometimes they like don't keep my attention, they've been fine. But this one truly sucked me in, and I found it genuinely enjoyable and genuinely captivating to watch.
You're kind of a documentary person in general, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We have, I think one friend I know too is also like that. I'm not very, like, I like a good TV show, like docuseries, I guess. Okay. Especially if it's true crime or something related, right?
Yeah.
Those are really enjoyable. But like a documentary in general, unless it's Planet Earth and I get to watch, you know, a shark jumping out of the water in 4K in slow motion, that's dope. But I don't know. It doesn't usually hook me. I prefer to read things.
Have not seen Set.
Genuinely, so pitch it to me. Let's hear it.
I genuinely would recommend it to people. It does. I mean, I even went when I was, you know, kind of refreshing my memory today, you know, Googled it. I think it has something like 100%. I think it has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes and something like an IMDb score of an 8. Like,
I believe it. But what's the elevator? What's the, like, the one sentence elevator pitch of this is a documentary on table setting? Like, that's got to be a hard sell.
Trust me. All right, man, I wasn't prepared for the elevator pitch. Give me a pause here. Give me a second. See if I can do it. Nope. Gonna have to explain it to you like 30 to 40 minutes here.
Perfect.
Instead. Okay.
Yeah. This podcast is now an advertisement.
So I think you mentioned, you know, it's set in 2021, came out in 2021. It's pretty current. It's Set. Hashtag pun intended.
Yeah. I like how you look to the camera that doesn't exist. Like,
the audience that is not here.
Yeah. Did everyone catch that?
So it's set at the Orange County Fair, and really how I would describe all the people they highlighted, the subjects, is that, I mean, my initial take on them, and I'm taking notes on my phone in the plane, and normally how I do my research is, you know, I have my laptop out and even multiple monitors, right, and just reading and taking notes. And so I'm rapidly taking notes and, like, pressing pause and rewind to make sure I get everything. And because I'm just so captivated. And truly, I hit play because it's a fucking 6-hour flight. And like,
was this from the Caribbean to New York or from New York to Seattle?
New York to Seattle.
Okay.
So
I would have also loved to be the person next to you who's like, why the fuck is this girl? And I was like, constantly pausing this documentary where all I see is tablecloths.
But they all, more or less, this is not going to surprise you, I guess, but they seem like homemakers is the best way I can describe them.
Sure.
So it kind of opens up with like this piecemeal interview snippets from the people they're highlighting. And you quickly get a sense for how fierce the competition is and how harshly people are judged. So they're just, you know, giving you these snippets of examples that have happened to them. Like, one woman forgot her fork once, and she said, "I really forked myself over."
Nice. Yeah.
Another,
way to go, Eleanor.
Another woman had points deducted because she mixed up where the wine glass and the water glass should be placed on the table. Like, this is very precise. Like, they literally pull out rulers because the knife should be X inches from the corner of the table. Like, this shit is serious.
So maybe I missed it, but I don't think you actually gave the context that it was a competition. I mean, picked it up mid conversation stream, but yeah, this tracks now. It's kind of like the poultry competition or whatever else, right? Like, it's extreme ironing, right? Like, people, it's not just the domestic activity. It's people competing against each other.
100%. And it's funny you say that because I think, you know, as I was looking over my notes and just, you know, really boring context for our readers, normally 4 pages of notes gets me like our normal episode, right? And so since I'm taking all of this on my phone and I, you know, send it to myself and copy and paste it into a document, I'm like, how long is this going to be? It was 6 pages.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, oh my God.
That's a lot of content.
So that was part of the thing that led to me like, maybe I'll really just highlight the documentary itself, because in and of itself, it's so captivating in how they kind of do the character, I don't say character development, but how they highlight the people. Anyway, so as I was thinking through that today, I was like, normally I would give like the background and explain on what it is. I was like, nope, we're just going to walk through the documentary. So, thank you. Yes, it is The Art of Setting a Table and a Competition. And there's usually a theme. There are a lot of rules upon which people are judged. I'll get to how people are assessed kind of at the end. But yeah, it's really just having like a very decorative, beautiful, ornate, and technically accurate table setting.
So I just came back from a wedding in Florida.
Yes.
A couple weeks ago, right? And at the rehearsal dinner that we were at, one person there started just giving serious shit to the caterers or whoever like set it up, because she was pointing out that the knife and the fork were on the wrong side of the plates. Like, so the knife was on the left side and the fork was
I got it.
That's... Right. I'm just making sure that's the correct, because I am not schooled in etiquette.
I don't know what the correct side is. That's fucking annoying, yeah, though.
But they, it's like, where did this caterer person go to school? Like, if this is where they think, blah, blah, blah. Turns out it was the groom-to-be who had set the table setting, and she was saying it to him, and it was kind of awkward. But it was that, you know, that's now all that's running through my head, right? How serious people take etiquette like this, which from a competition standpoint, that would be fun. From a trying to throw a nice rehearsal dinner for your friends and family, I'm not sure you need to be that stick up your ass about it.
Who gives a fuck? Like, people have commented. So I'm right-handed, and I guess it's common if you're right-handed to cut with your left.
No.
Yeah. Oh no, you cut with your right.
You hold your fork with your left. You cut with your right.
Cut with your right.
Yeah.
I just like, as a kid, I always did it opposite because it was just easier for me to learn. I was just like, why would I? The whole concept of switch, you know, cutting with your right and then switching it so you have your fork back in your right to take the bite. That just seemed really inefficient. And as you know, I love food, so I'm always looking for the most efficient way.
Shovel in your mouth.
To get it in my mouth. But people have commented, they'll be like, are you left-handed? How did you learn to cut like that? And I'm just like, efficiency?
Well, I mean, I don't, when I'm like eating steak, I still use my left, I'm right-handed, but I'll use my left hand to take bites. Like, my fork stays in my left hand the entire time. I don't switch my fork back and forth.
Feels too weird to me. No, I would rather cut with my left and just, you know, gotta keep that fork hand strong.
For those not watching Brenna actively talk about this, she's like basically motioned a conveyor belt that of food that's gonna go straight into her mouth.
Exactly. Yeah. Where was I? Those were some of the examples from the documentary, but from some of the articles, they also had examples. And one woman was dinged because the dessert fork was too large and facing the wrong way.
Do they have to craft the silverware themselves?
It gets super technical. Like, it gets, I'll get into one example.
Dude, some metal fortune.
And last but not least, another table that had a nautical theme, you know, got like points for having rope wrapped legs. But then a note on it was that the teaspoon should have been on a saucer and the tablecloth should have been rectangular and not oval. And there was one woman in the documentary towards the end. She had this really cute setting with her napkin. I forget what it was, but the napkin was kind of like tied up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fork or the knife was placed
inside of it. Yep.
And that's a no-no because it needs to be accessible and you don't want people to have to pull it out. So she was dinged for that. FYI. Yeah.
Well, and to be fair, you need to be careful when pulling it out. Like, that's a dangerous activity.
Where's the cricket? Cheep, 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 cheep.
That wasn't a sex joke until midway through when I saw your face. I'm like, all right, we'll just keep going.
I thought that was definitely a sex joke. And I was like,
no,
really,
I was mocking how silly that rule sounded. But
this is a civilized competition and I don't need you muddying it.
I mean, I am intrigued. You're selling me on it.
I actually, like, I'm not, I know I'm going to walk you through the actual entirety of the documentary.
Yeah, so now I don't need to watch it. Yeah.
But I think you should, I know this is going to sound weird. I would rewatch.
Wow, that's like two in a week for you.
I know.
Started with Mad Max, and now you're on to table setting competitions.
Mad Max Fury Road changed my life.
If you had to give an Oscar to one of those, set or Mad Max Fury Road.
What's the category?
Doesn't matter. By the way, yes, for everyone listening, it is 2022 and Brenna just said Mad Max Fury Road just changed her life. Just so we're all caught up on the timeline of Brenna's pop culture knowledge.
Only 7 years late.
Yeah.
So then again, I think what I mentioned is that I really liked about the documentary is they do just such a great job delving into the characters and kind of crafting a story mm-hmm. and an arc. So the first person they show is this woman named Bonnie Overman, who they dub the veteran. And a lot of the articles I read that actually some of them predate this documentary mention her. So she is like, she's been in the game a long time.
She's a vet.
Yeah, she's a vet.
Yeah.
She's been doing competitive tablescaping for 23 years. She, like, by the looks of her, I would say she looks like she could be, probably is retired around that age. And it kind of starts with the film crew going into her house where she has fucking framed photos of her table settings.
Wow.
Including one she's done for the White House. So she got to sell the White House. And you can see some of the themes she's done. She primarily does movie sets, or that's like the theme that she kind of crafts into her tables. So there's one that's Breakfast at Tiffany's, and it's the blue boxes. There's a picture of Audrey Hepburn to hold the napkins. There's like these black glove type statues, Pirates of the Caribbean. So like right away,
dope. That would be awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So right away you get the sense that this woman is the real deal. And she goes into, you know, just how painstaking it is. And she compares it, you're gonna love this, to having a baby, because she said,
I'm fine with her making a comparison as long as I'm not being held accountable for that.
Because she says it takes 6 months to plan.
What the fuck?
Like 6 months, and that was kind of cool. Another cool thing about the documentary is I don't know how long it takes, place, maybe up to a year prior or 9 months prior, but you see the whole kind of soup to nuts of them planning, them ideating, them starting to pull things together, them taking things down all the way to competition day. So you really see the entirety of this process.
Is it like the thing where it'll be like 3 days till competition?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes.
I love that kind of thing. Okay, so I'm on board. As much as I was crapping on documentaries, I love that.
So good. And so, I mean, I mentioned she incorporates movie themes into her tablescaping, but she even says she thinks of it more as a movie set. She wants to create a masterpiece and everything on the table has to be perfection. And, you know, she goes on to explain that, you know, the places, and much like any kind of competition or like the poultry show that we talked about, you know, there's third, second, first place, but there's one above first place, and that is best in show. And that is what everyone is competing for.
Yes. Like the Westminster Dog Show.
Exactly. She has won best in show and first several times. And she says the few times that she hasn't gotten a ribbon, so like not even third place, she was brought to tears.
Oh, no.
Yes, Bonnie, it's a hard life. Yeah. And
how much does it cost? Like to.
It's an interesting question. Yeah. So they do cover that. Everyone is so different. So one woman said she spent no more than $300. Another pair, mother, daughter, the mother says she spent upwards of $6,000.
Jesus. Do they get judged on like the quality of stuff? Like, so could you technically like show up with like Target paper plates and like red Solo cups and be like, it's technically on theme and the theme is
beer pong.
Yeah, the theme is a frat party.
No, you actually like, I think that does come into play in terms of people have like their subconscious bias, and I think you're going to be drawn to nicer, more elegant things.
Sure.
But I'll kind of wait to highlight. That's funny you asked that, because there is someone who gets really, really frugal with it. And I thought they did a really nice job.
Yeah.
So then it kind of goes out to her backyard, which I don't know where the fuck she lives, but she must have like an acre of property, because her backyard is basically like a theme park. So I'm not kidding. She has a section.
Cedar Point, does she know?
Like, she has a section decorated like Jurassic Park. And then another section.
Whoa.
I know, like there's like a fake alligator, there's a fake dinosaur. She has another Indiana.
Alligators are dinosaurs.
You're a dinosaur. Boom roasted. Got him.
because you're old.
Because you're old.
There it is.
An Indiana Jones section, a tropical section, and she just has so much shit. And I was reading separately an article about her where it says she has two sheds full of stuff in her backyard, and that's what's put away. That's on top of all the decorations that are out, and that's just for tablescaping. Two full sheds for tablescaping.
That's great. Well, and I gotta imagine that it sounds like she's probably the kind of person who doesn't want to reuse something that she's done in the past.
So no. That would be a big no-no for Bonnie.
So why is she even keeping this old stuff? To, you know, like, I don't know. Probably
austerity.
And in just probably the same way we all want to hold on to some things that mean something to us, right? Like, I get it. That was a rhetorical question, I guess, when I asked it. I talked myself through it. Carry on.
Am I good to go?
I think so.
Okay. And so I mentioned, you know, the category for this competition this year was travel. So she chose Africa as her theme, and it shows her hand painting a tablecloth to look like zebra stripes, and it looks pretty cool. So that's Bonnie. She's the veteran. Then it goes to Marie and Christelle, a mother and daughter pair who have been tablescaping for over 20 years, and they actually did their very first competition together, but it really didn't go well.
I know. internal conflict, they didn't win?
Both, but like, ooh, because nice. of the team conflict.
That's what I want. Yeah.
I mean, basically,
I live for the drama.
Basically, they have like the typical annoyances of all mother-daughter pairs. They have very different styles.
Can you go into that? What's that like? Mm-mm. I'm not a mother or a daughter, so I don't know if I'm understanding correctly.
Let me draw a parallel. You annoy me frequently. It's mm-hmm. like that, but if mm-hmm. you were a daughter and I was a mother.
Got it. No, I'm tracking now.
Okay,
that's
good. Does that help?
Yeah, extremely.
Okay. So they have constant annoyances, but really they have very different styles. And beyond that, they have very different work approaches. And they both talk about how the mom is super high strung, super particular, and the daughter is a major procrastinator. Like, jumping kind of forward to when they actually get into the competition, they're wrapping stuff up at 1 a.m. the morning of the competition. Whereas, like, other women have wrapped this shit up, you know, weeks prior, and they're just putting finishing touches on. She's like, man, I hope this works for tomorrow.
Would you consider yourself a mother or a daughter in this kind of situation?
Are you asking if I'm a procrastinator or not?
Yeah.
It's very situational.
Yeah. So you're a procrastinator.
Sometimes, but not always.
Okay, got it.
So the second year they parted ways and they competed against each other, which they've been doing ever since. So they've been on their, is that funny to you?
It kind of is. The fucking mother-daughter pair broke up and now they literally competing. That's amazing.
Even better though. So like the very first year that they separated, the daughter won best in show.
Oh no.
The mom, I'm not kidding. She's so bitter. No, she's just like, I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter. Like, she looked fucking pissed.
Yeah. And blood feud.
Yes, 100%.
This is how supervillains are created, by the way.
Yes. Vengeance against the parent or the daughter.
Exactly.
So, you know, they'd been competitors for 22 years. And for this documentary, they decided to work together again for the first time since 22 years prior when that fucking blew up in their face.
Wait, so they've been, so how old is the daughter?
It's hard to tell. The woman, the mother probably looked like she was maybe 70. So I'd put the daughter at like in her 40s, early 40s.
Okay,
yeah, something
it,
like that.
It. Okay. It was unclear to me until you said that. I guess I didn't catch on until you pointed out that there was a 20-year gap.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That makes more sense now.
And so it's funny. They kind of panned to their husbands and the daughter's son. So the grandson of the mother. They've been roped into helping for years, and the husbands are sitting on a couch talking about it, and they look so annoyed. And it's like, yeah, we basically get pulled in as props and help them have to set it up. And one guy, I think the older or the younger husband said, my favorite part is the end. And he looked like he really fucking meant it.
It's like when you're walking through a mall where women are like shoe shopping or something, and you just see like the collection of guys just like backs against a wall, like aimlessly browsing their phones, slowly dying inside.
Yeah, pretty much.
I love it.
And so it's funny you say that. So, you know, we talked about the cost a little bit. This is the woman, the mother, who said she's probably spends upward of $6,000. And this is, so this is a 70-year-old woman. Okay. This is all, like, this is all she does.
It's her 401k. Got
it. That's a fuck ton of money.
Yeah. That's where our Social Security money is going, just so we're clear, as a country.
So her husband, so this woman's husband, he is definitely like the grump of the group. He said, perfect. I don't think they spend that much. And, you know, the dot crew is like, what if she spends thousands of dollars? And he's like, there's no way. It's a 50-cent ribbon. But I guess if anyone would spend that much money, it would be women, because only women do that. And all the competitors are women. And then fucking pan to Tim. Like, this is what I'm talking about, is like, yeah, great cinematography is like, only women would be in this competition. And then they pan to the male competitor, yeah, Tim.
You know, I think part of the reason, like, I don't typically watch documentaries is sometimes I feel like it's, like, I feel too much of the narrative crafting going on, right? It's kind of like reality TV, where it's like you kind of feel the scripting, you know, when it's not really real the way, yeah, like it's presented. But in this case, like, this would be amazing. This is the kind of reality TV or documentary I would totally watch, because I want that drama and those cutaways.
So good. So it pans to Tim, who's 41 at the time the documentary is being made. And he said he actually started when he was 12. And I have to tell you, Tim is my favorite because he is so fucking funny. And he calls tablescaping, he goes, you know, it's the whitest thing I do as a white person. So how can you not like him, yeah, automatically?
I'm in. Yeah.
And then that, like, kind of a sad note, but they also highlight throughout the documentary how he's really struggling financially. He had been laid off from work and kind of, you know, I think it panned over a year, like I said. And as they get closer to competition, he's like, I ran out of money. I'm on food stamps now. It's really bad. Yeah. So I was really rooting for him. Like, they really did a good job of just, like,
yeah, making him the underdog.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, flashback to his sense of humor. He's like, I just hate that they call it tablescaping, because you're not scaping a table, you're setting a table. So he hates that it's called tablescaping, and he says it's the whitest thing he does as a white person.
Yeah.
And his driver, he says, is the ribbon. He basically equated it to a drug he craves. And kind of going back to when he was laid off, he said, it's been really tough, but in some ways it was helpful because it meant he could do the Orange County Fair competition, which he hadn't done in years. So he had taken a break from tablescaping. And he said it saved him from a really bad depression. Like, this is his creative outlet. But you really, you know, the documentary does a much better job than I can do kind of crafting his story and telling that's about narrative. It. But you really feel for him. And, you know, he's talked about, like I mentioned, his driver is the ribbon. Like, it just means so much. He's like, it might seem silly, but it's that sense of pride and accomplishment that you put your heart and soul into something. Like, imagine if we had a podcast competition.
Yeah. It's showing the productivity of your effort, right? Like, it's realizing that. Let me ask you a question. What's the whitest thing you do as a white person?
Oh, good question.
I know the answer.
First thing that comes to mind is teaching yoga.
No. Nope. That's close, though.
Backpacking.
No. Nope.
Whitest thing I do as a white person. Give me a hint.
I'm just going to tell you what it is.
Okay.
You have a fucking podcast.
Good one.
Got him.
Bada bang, bada boom. Fucking funny.
Thanks.
And so anyway, I mentioned, you know, on the kind of sad part, but again, good work in the documentary, of highlighting the people and the story, is there's a part where, you know, after he's lost all his money, he's on food stamps. He's like, well, I'm going to go to my mom's, because all, like, I have storage there, some other stuff. So I'm going to see, like, what I can use that I already have. Okay. So I don't have to buy something. And, you know, separate.
The eco approach. I like it.
Yeah. The frugal approach.
Yeah.
And
saving the environment. Give him some credit.
Yeah. And, you know, they interview his mom and she's like, yeah, he was just a different kid. Things were always really tough for him. And I forget if he's neurodivergent or if there's mental health issues. I think there were a couple other things. And she's like, you know, I've told him a million times he can come move in with me. And he just, you know, he doesn't want to. He's 41. Yeah. Like, it's you feel that, right?
Yeah.
It's a sense of pride, and you can just feel that. Like if you were, if at our point, at this point in our lives, if out of nowhere, what, something happened, all of a sudden I don't have any money and I just am barely scraping by. I get it. That's a really, you can go home, but that's a really difficult thing to do. Yeah. So anyway, they crafted that really well, but it was really heartbreaking because he goes through the storage in her garage where he has a few bins of all his stuff, and rats and mice got into one of the bins, including the one that had all his ribbons.
Oh, shit.
And it really hurt my heart. Like, it really hurt my heart to watch.
But, like, this happened live in the documentary? Yeah. Like, he went to shut off and... Oh, he's that like, would be heartbreaking.
I know, when he dumps them in the, like, dumpster, he's like, well, there's no point in keeping these. And, it, like, it really... I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Sorry, Tim.
Sorry, Tim. You funny white guy. You still got that going for you.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, I know. On to Hillary.
But moving on.
Moving on to Hillary. So you're going to like this one. So this starts out for Hillary Moore. It starts out in the documentary by following her going to a sensory deprivation tank, which she says...
I always wanted to do that.
I've done one.
How did that go?
I was not a fan. So it's funny... because she says it gives her a creative edge, and it pans to an interview with the owner who says the float lowers your blood pressure and increases your creativity because you, quote, your brain enters a theta state.
Okay.
And,
I'm out. Yeah. Nope.
And so it's funny because, you know, I was taking notes on my phone on the plane, so I had just have three eye roll emojis next to that.
Theta.
Like, please, like, fuck off.
Pick a different Greek alphabetical letter.
But no, I did one once and it was funny. I think we've talked about how... I don't know if we, I think we've talked about it on this podcast, maybe for like the, one of the dating episodes we've done, but I don't understand how people cheat, because even when I was just dating two guys at once, you know, like, or like going on
casually,
yes. Yep. I had the hardest time keeping track of who I had had a conversation. So I'm like, how do people live these like really clandestine, like secretive lives? Anyway, the reason I say that is because they both, I think on their first date, both told me I needed to do a sensory deprivation tank, completely like separate topics.
Man, I just wanted to isolate you away from them.
They're like, get the fuck away.
As the place that we can hear you the least is when you're literally in a soundless tank.
Yes. Please, they were both pretty into me.
Uh-huh. Where are they now?
Hey, I ended things.
Okay.
But they both like swore by it, and someone else had recently recommended it. So like, fuck it. Like, I'll just try it. And someone had said, you know, really great for chronic pain, this, that, and the other thing. Like, I'll try it. And one reason I never wanted to try it is because I felt like I'd get too freaked out, the claustrophobia, because they closed the pod on you. That was my biggest hesitation. But everyone said, no, it's like, it really don't feel like it.
You in water, right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
It's salt water. So you're just floating there.
Yep.
And so I go, and it was fine. Like, I didn't feel claustrophobic. I was surprised. But towards the end, I was really ready for it to be over. Just, you know, I feel like I was getting a little chilly and just bored. Finally, the time's up, and I get out. And
is there like an abort button? Like, can you just request?
You can. I was just like, I'm waiting for, like, my body didn't feel any different. I was kind of hoping for some like miracle cure for like pain. And then what I distinctly remember is, you know how you get water in your ear and you have to like pound it to get out?
Yeah.
I had water in my ear for no less than 3 months, and it drove me fucking bananas.
You never did the water cleaning thing?
Is that like when you put like a suctiony thing up to your ear and like...
A syringe? No, you add to the opposite. You use a syringe full of water and you blast your ear and actually flushes it out.
No.
I had to do that because I've had water in my ear because of swimming, and then sometimes like earwax will like plug up in there. As a result, it gets really fucking annoying, like makes it really hard to hear.
Yeah.
So either they have like self kits you can do this to, but you can also just go to the doctor and they will literally, it's like a pressure washer. Like, seriously, the amount of like the amount of water and the speed at which they shoot into your ear, it just basically goes all the way to your eardrum.
And doesn't it hurt?
It can, yeah. And it just blasts. It blasts it and then it comes back up, right? Like, it ricochets, basically.
Yeah.
And so, by the way, if you ever do it, if you're the kind of person who gets like satisfied by like kind of gross things, if you know what I mean?
Yes.
The earwax that comes out of your ear, the stuff that's been like in the back of your ear for a very long time and never made its way out, it is it's impressive and it's gross, but it is impressive. And they show it to you because they know people are like morbidly fascinated with that.
I have a distinct memory from childhood. My friend had like a bad earache. We were probably 8 at the time. And so I was over there and her mom did an ear candle on her.
Okay.
You know how those, so.
Yeah, I've heard those are kind of pseudoscience, but yeah.
But it pulled out the fucking wax. And so like we crack open the candle and it's just all her earwax. And it's like the most disgusting, amazing thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
It's like Shrek. Yeah. Fucking love it. So Hillary was in a sensory deprivation tank.
And so after she leaves, she said in the float tank, she began to have flashbacks to her trip to Africa. And she knew that would be her theme. And she wanted to focus on, though, get this, the concerns of what's going on in Africa, like poaching of endangered species.
And as a white person, that is the thing you should be concerned about.
Obviously.
I do like it's two white people so far who have been concerned with Africa for their theme.
Well, that's the funniest. It flashes back to Bonnie and you can just tell this is going to be a point of drama since Bonnie had already said she's doing Africa. Like you can just tell this is going to be a big deal.
So let me clarify. How many people are in the competition? Like, do they all know each other?
Well, they do by way of just everyone who's stuck
there.
It's the same people. That said, I was reading up on the fair and you really have to enter early because they only take 20 people
nationally
at a
time. Or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, local, I assume it's kind of local.
Where you go. Yeah.
But okay. There's always a wait list because they only let 20 people do it.
Got it.
But they mostly all know each other. We'll get to that, but they talk about each other. So it cuts back to after she's talked about, oh, I want to do the concerns of what's going on in Africa, like poaching and endangered species, like really make it a statement. It cuts to her telling us of stories of tables she's done in prior years. And the prior year's theme had been, quote, in the sand. And so she just put a ton of trash on the table as a statement and like sand to make a statement on all the trash that's in our oceans. And it literally shows her pulling out bones from a raw chicken to add to the, you know, the pile of garbage and shit that's in our ocean.
Okay.
And then it cuts to other contestants saying they thought her table was bizarre, upsetting, and it hurt the legitimacy of the competition. And people really just seem not to like her. So there's drama within this community.
Yeah, I'm going to say just from the way you're describing her, Hillary's probably not my number one either. I'm rooting for Tim still.
I love Tim.
Yeah. but keep going.
And she also happens to have a very robust taxidermy collection.
Okay. And suddenly the last puzzle piece falls into place.
Yeah. So she, you know, says she'll use a lot of it for the Africa table. She's like, oh, I have a stuffed monkey. It'll be great here. She's like, they're all ethically sourced. And then
where do you get an ethically sourced dead monkey to stuff?
I don't know, Jordan.
Fall out of a tree?
Yeah, it fell onto her.
Okay.
And then it flashes again to some of her competitors talking about the time. Didn't she use mice one year on her table? Freeze-dried mice. She played it off as, you know, she's talking about it. Yeah, so used some freeze-dried mice. They would have gone to waste otherwise. And then it pans to her husband who says, not too long after that competition ended, the mice started to decompose and insects started fucking coming out of them.
Sure. Yeah, that's larva. That makes sense.
Yep.
Gross.
Disgusting. Yeah. But, you know, like a good husband, he said her work really bordered more on art than, say, like traditional table setting. So he's like, that's just how I view it. And the last thing I'll add for her, you know, she's going to use taxidermy, make a statement. She found AR-15 casings. So
found.
Found, sure. Yes.
Yeah. Not hard to find, to be fair, in America. Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
So now flash to Crystal Young, who is the defending champion. She has won.
Woo, woo.
Woo, woo. And this is actually crazy. She only started 4 years ago. So she's really hit the ground running because she's won best in show 3 years in a row.
Oh, shit. Crystal from left field. Amazing.
Oh, shit, Crystal. Girl.
Keep going. I take back what I said earlier about podcasting. This is the whitest thing you've done.
And said she actually got started because she was at a fair and she was blown away by Bonnie Overman's Pirate of the Caribbean setting.
I can't even imagine it because of Aphantasia, and yet I still would be blown away by it.
Blown away, right? Yeah. So that was her inspiration to start. And ironically, the only reason Bonnie, so this is our veteran here, the only reason she didn't get Best in Show Crystal's first year was because she misspelled Pinot Grigio. Come on, Bonnie. If there's a white lady drink, it's definitely Pinot Grigio.
Bonnie probably had a few too many Pinot Grigios when she was writing it down.
Probably. And so back to Crystal, you know, I love how they interview their family members. And, you know, her husband said, of course, he thought it was strange at first, but now he's really involved in it. He does like woodworking and an engineering role. And what I found really funny is that he was actually raised in a very strict environment in which they really took etiquette seriously. And he had to read a book about etiquette for young men. And her first year, he tells Crystal, hey, I think your spoon is in the wrong place. She disagreed. She lost the competition because, you guessed it, he was fucking right.
That's right. Men have a place here too.
They Tim, sure do.
This guy.
And that's it.
Yeah. But we're there.
We're there. The last thing I'll say about Crystal is she very much enjoys like the country theme and uses it often. And someone criticized her for it or just kind of made a snide comment. Like they think she's gotten Best in Show so many times because of course a country or farm theme is going to resonate at a county fair.
I get. So who's the voters? Is it just the public?
I'll get to that later.
Okay. Yeah, well, keep me in suspense.
So then we meet Janet Liu, who is our first and only non-white person. She travels the world looking for items for her table. And since she travels a lot, the travel theme this year was perfect for her. And when you go into her house, she has actually made a room that has all the tables she's made. Many of her tables because she can't fit them all.
Sure.
So I would have to say out of everyone has some sort of memorabilia of some sort, like the photos, but hers is a much grander fashion than anyone else's. It's led to arguments with her husband in which she said, if you're going to make me choose, I would choose the tables. She has so many tables that this year, instead of like placing them all in one room, so they've all been in one room up until this point, this year, instead of a Christmas tree, they had a table. She hosted her daughter's baby shower and had her tables out, and the tables got more attention than the pregnant daughter.
I'm sure the daughter loved that too.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, Tim was my favorite, but these are hilarious. These two ladies are hilarious. It's called Cheryl and Ginny. They go by the Water Babes.
Sure.
They are two older women who teach water aerobics together.
Yep.
And it pans to a young
woman. I know these women.
You do. We all know them.
Yeah.
May we be them.
Yeah.
May we become them. And it flashes to a young lifeguard who works at that pool. And she's like, yeah, they definitely socialize way more than they exercise.
as someone who used to swim next to a water aerobics class that would, you know, like frequently in the morning, I know exactly who these people are.
It actually looks really fun. Like, I could see myself. I always thought that looked kind of stupid, but I could just see myself getting into it when I'm older.
Every like late 20s, early 30s woman says that, like, oh, yeah, I think I'm like really been to water aerobics. I'm like, okay.
I know something about, like, I love being in the water. It's a great, like, it's socialized and it's an easy way to quote unquote exercise when you're older.
You don't think anything in the water counts as exercise.
No, but
nope,
I don't
do it. Pull back.
I did. So basically they brainstorm with their whole class and they kind of show, you know, they're standing in a circle. They're not doing sure. any exercise. They're just chit-chatting like, oh, we're going to enter and we have all these ideas. And so they decide to do a Moroccan themed table and everyone in the class is like, oh, I have something you could use. And they're all going to bring
very
things.
Very white. Sure.
And then they joke that they're only allowed, since they're the only duo here, aside from the mother-daughter pair, they're the only duo here. You're only allowed by the rules to have one person set up. And so they're like, yeah, every year we just go in and start setting up until one of us gets kicked out. And sure enough, that does happen in like when they get to the competition, like they're both in there and you watch the judge come by and say like, are you together? You need to get out of here. Like, well, we got, you know, 20 minutes today. So that's good.
I love the shamelessness of that. Also, Moroccan Arabian Nights or whatever, I'm pretty sure was my prom theme. So
really?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure at least one of my high school dances was that.
Sure. Did you know that grinding was banned at my high school dances because we needed room for the Holy Ghost? In fairness, though, as lame as that was at the time, I can only imagine, like, I would not want to be a chaperone or an adult around, like, teenagers. I think I'd want to kill myself. Of course I would ban grinding.
I don't want to be around other adults grinding.
Let alone children.
Yeah, at the wedding, there was a lot of drunk people doing things that it was a lot of people who had young children in the home, but didn't have the young children there because of the wedding, and were let loosing for the first time in a long time. And
you mean letting loose?
No, I meant let loosing, but I didn't want to see it. I hated it. It was awful.
Did you let loosing?
No, I was recovering from appendix surgery, so I was not moving very well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So fast forward, preparing for the competition. So you asked on how they're judged. I thought it was going to be a little more detailed, but it's super arbitrary because there's four categories worth 25 points each.
Sure.
And within those categories, it's just, there's no like 2 points for this, 2 points for that. It's just 25 total, and the judges can dock you whatever they want to dock you.
It's completely subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the Olympics. Got it.
It is. It's they literally said this is the Olympics of table setting.
Yeah. Well, great. Can't wait to see what the Russian Federation scores these people.
Do you want to go into a political rant? Should we save that for later?
No, I'm just saying judge biases and subjectivity is a stupid way to rule things.
It is. So the first category is the suitability for occasion and theme. The second one is decorativeness and eye appeal. The third is creativity and originality. And the last one is correctness and menu. So this is the other thing, is there's no food, but they need to come up with a menu that they think fits the theme, right? And it really needs to match the theme, and the items need to match the menu. So for example, Janet lost 1 year because her menu said you wouldn't need a fork for something, but she set the table with a fork. So she was docked points for that. And it's everyone's least favorite category because it's so specific. And you were joking about this earlier about, you know, the detail around it. But Bonnie, our veteran, she actually had this little like saucer cup, and in her menu was a bowl of soup. And she was very nervous that the saucer cup wouldn't be counted as like true china, or if it was like a consommé, I think she called it, because a consommé,
like an accoutrement, that's another word I know,
a consommé, because a consommé you wouldn't drink or you wouldn't eat soup out of. So she took it to a fucking appraiser, an antique appraiser, to see if it was a soup bowl or a consommé, because she was nervous she would be knocked points.
How big are the table, like how many settings do they have to place?
Four. It's pretty small tables.
Okay, so it's four. It's a four person setting. Okay,
and pretty small tables.
Yep.
So they take this shit seriously.
Yeah.
So now we're into competition day. So Crystal, this is our defending champ. Only been doing it 4 years. As a reminder, she had this beautiful like backdrop of a red barn, and I know this is tough for you as you have aphantasia.
Just talk. Let me know when I need to pay attention again.
I had string lights, like working string lights, a background with a windmill. So she's the one who always like seems to do a farm theme. And they, you know, move it into
travel a farm.
Good one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was a legitimate question. Tennessee.
So both Bonnie and Hillary had their Africa theme. So Bonnie, who is the veteran, it's like this big foliage kind of centerpiece. It's really quite beautiful. Flowers, like
tree of life type shit.
Yeah. Fake insects, but they're fake, so they're not offensive. And then Hillary, she had just a shit ton of taxidermy, a magazine about big game hunting, and the bullet casings classic. All sprinkled around.
That's classy. Yeah.
The mother and daughter pair, they did a Small World.
Like from Disneyland?
Disney. Yeah.
Which is getting replaced by Encanto, but yeah.
I guess. I was like, what the fuck is that? Like,
because it's around the world.
I get it, but it looked so bad. I didn't. I was like, and it's funny because.
But it's also like the most white, like, suburban American way to like think about travel. We went to Disneyland and we lost all the countries in Small World or Epcot.
Like when we talked about Disney adults.
Yeah, exactly.
That.
Yeah. Sorry. Disney adults, all of you out there.
But and it was funny too, because I told you only one person can set up. The mom let the daughter set up, and the whole time she's like watching from afar and just like, I don't know why she chose that table. Why'd you choose that table? Oh, why is she placing it there? And she's so stressed out and just criticizing her. And then it gets to Tim, who went with an Oh, the Places You'll Go theme.
I love Dr. Seuss.
I know. And he said it as if it was for a high school graduation. And so I mentioned to you that, you know, he'd run out of money. So everything he did was very creative and frugal. And he was using things that he already owned or could, you know, thrift or could make. So he basically, he made a paper mache hot air balloon.
Cute.
He had all the glassware he got from the dollar store. So he only spent, I don't know, like $12 on the glassware and the plates. And then he just, you know, printed and framed like an Oh, the Places You'll Go poster. And actually, you know, it definitely looked on the homemade side-ish.
Yeah.
But it was also like really well done. I personally thought it looked nicer than the Small World one.
Yeah. And I, you know, as a parent, I would love that one. Because I love, that's one of the few books I can read endlessly to my son. And thank God it is one of the ones he wants me to. Because it is a great book. Dr. Seuss rhymes are awesome.
They are. And then the one thing, so I told you the Water Babes, they had this Moroccan table, mm-hmm. and it didn't take long for one of them to get kicked out. But prior to the competition day, they had the women over to their garage to reveal the Moroccan table to them. Basically, since they weren't going to be at the fair, like, hey, let's show you what we've been talking about, what you've donated stuff for. And so they fucking open the garage door. It's this spectacle. One of the husbands is playing drums, and out comes this young, attractive, very muscular guy, like belly dancing.
Sure.
Belly dancing. It was their pool boy.
There it is.
I was fucking dying. All the women, they're all like probably their 60s, 70s. These old white ladies are just like, so like, oh, wow. They're like flirting with him. The one woman's like, oh, I think he was flirting back. And then one of the women is interviewed and she's talking about how, oh, it doesn't bother me. I actually, you know, it reminds me of those male strip shows in Vegas. And I've actually been over 55 times. And I've been a few times when I stick my hands right down their pants, so that wasn't anything strange to me. I'm literally laughing to like out loud on the airplane to myself watching
poor that. Chippendales dancers, but also way to objectify men, women.
But like on like it's
but like it's okay.
No. I was gonna say
but it's fine, says Brenna.
The innocence of like there's a different dynamic of just older late women who haven't
This is just reverse sexism.
Can I? There's something like endearing about that, right? Where the gender imbalance isn't there. But no, when she's like, yeah, I put my hands down the dancer's pants and I've been to Vegas 55 times. I'm like, that's fucking weird, lady. Like, there's a line.
That's assault.
That's assault. I'm like, did he want you to? So then last but not least, Janet, hers was my favorite. Her husband helped her make this beautiful wooden trellis. And, you know, she draped it with like flowers and grapes and it had a chandelier hanging down. So that one was my favorite. And
are you gonna tell us how it ends, or are you gonna like leave it for viewers to actually watch the documentary?
Fuck no. Hashtag spoiler alert.
Okay.
You're gonna hear who wins. Like, do you want to hear who wins?
Yeah. I mean
I guess I don't have to.
I was just asking what your plan was.
I mean, I've brought you through the whole documentary at this point. It would be real.
It's been really quite sucked. The narrative without an ending.
So then we get to the judges, right? And you know, they're flashing around, they're talking about, you know, everyone thinks the judges are way too strict. And then again, I love Tim because everyone's kind of quipping how they don't like the judges. It's, you know, unfair judging, blah, blah, blah. But Tim respects them and he goes, they're there to judge you. What do you think judging means? The judges are right. And so the judges are kept secret. So they don't actually know who the judges are.
So just random people are walking by, but it's like Secret Shopper style.
That's originally what I thought. But instead, basically, it gets shut down for a while.
Oh, so
the judges go through and then it's open to other people.
Got it.
So in comes the two judges, two blonde-haired white ladies,
sure,
about 40 to 50 years old, named Kim and Diana.
Tracks.
So they've done they do catering, and they've set up together in their lives upwards of like 20 to 30,000 tables. So I'm like, oh, that's what an expert is on tables. I was like, who?
You've met the qualifications.
Truly. I was kind of wondering before they said what they do, what does qualify you to be a judge. I'm like, oh, I guess that that's it.
Yep.
And they also won a worldwide contest with over 5,000 caterers. So they said what they're looking for when they go through is a wow table outside of the norm. And then what's kind of funny is they have a cleric following them around to write down all their comments. And they ask her like, oh, what's your favorite table?
Cleric?
Mm-hmm. Like someone taking notes.
Oh, okay. Not like a religious person.
No.
Got it.
And they ask her, they're having trouble deciding like what their favorite is. So they ask her and she says, you know, I can't say obviously. And then she turns to the camera when they're away. And again, just great cinematography. She goes, I actually really don't like any of the tables this year. Fucking hilarious.
Just stone cold. I love that.
Pretty much. And so at the end of the day, let's see, who do you think got first place, not having seen anything, but only hearing my descriptions and about the people?
Bonnie.
No. Bonnie got, let's see.
I'm so sorry, Bonnie.
She got second place, actually.
So third place.
Because
that's how this makes sense.
Crystal got best in show again.
Wow.
But even as they're going through, they're, you know, the theme is travel, right? But the judges go through. And my impression was, and I haven't verified this, but I think they're different each year, mm-hmm. or like they get different people. So it, maybe they all fall prey to this bias, but they're like, oh, it's so cute that she did the farm and we're at a fair. So I could see that probably does play a role.
But again, what's that? That's not. Where are you traveling?
I don't know.
The Midwest?
But this killed me about Bonnie. So this was like the funniest part to me is when they're setting up. So they have a designated amount of time. They have very strict rules. Obviously, they kicked out the woman and the pair. But Bonnie gets her table set up really quickly. And then she's talking to Tim, like chit-chatting. And it's a different judge. It's like someone just monitoring the setup. So it goes over to her and says, like, you need to stop talking. Like, this is against rules.
Don't fraternize.
No, you don't want to distract the other players because it comes, the other competitors, because it is so meticulous and they are judged on like the tiniest details. Right. You don't want to distract them from that. And so this whole fucking documentary, I'm like, she looks like a Karen. And I'm like, Brenna, you're being judgmental. That is not cool. You cannot just judge an old white lady based on her haircut. This fucking bitch. She fucking like throws a fit. And she's like, I'm never going to come back here. This is ridiculous. She basically starts crying.
She was attacked.
Attacked. Yeah. This is ridiculous. I'm just trying to talk to someone. I didn't know it was, we aren't allowed to talk to people. And of course you do. You've been doing this 23 years. Of course, you know, that's a rule. And if there's a difference between like chit chatting and just keep your fucking mouth shut. And she like, she was arguing with the judge. She was like crying outside and she was talking to Tim outside. She's like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm just not going to do this fair anymore. I'll never come back here. I will never come back here. And then, so she leaves because she's pissed, right?
Yeah.
Obviously that's what you do if you're a Karen. And
poor Bonnie.
Because she knows Crystal, because she like her and Crystal are chit-chatting, they're friends, right? Crystal looks up to Bonnie. She's left. What's funny is Bonnie texts Crystal and says, hey, I heard you got best in show. Is it true? And then they pan to Bonnie. You know, I had to leave early. And I read online that Crystal got best in show and mine was second place, but I knew that just had to be a mistake. So that's why I had to text Chris. Like, I had to text her. Like, she couldn't believe that
she didn't win.
She didn't win. Yeah. And the funny thing was, so Bonnie, Africa lady, veteran, gets second place. You can get multiple second places, I guess.
Okay.
Hillary, other Africa lady, also got second place. Which was the best thing to me.
Nail in the coffin for you, Bonnie.
Nail in the coffin. Yeah. But anyway, that is Tailscaping. And that has been my recollection of the best documentary I've ever seen, and I thank you for coming along this journey with me.
This was, for someone who couldn't visualize a moment of it, I still found it very compelling, and maybe I will actually watch the documentary now. I don't know that I need to, because you were so good at telling the story, but
because you have aphantasia, you need to see it brought to life.
It's kind of like, It's kind of like watching Great British Bake Off or something. Like, I just want to see the cakes, right? Yes. Like, so I'm kind of, yeah, now I'm interested. I want to see this, oh, the places you'll go table.
Genuinely good. 10 out of 10 recommend. That and Mad Max Fury Road. And that's tablescaping. Do you have an obscure subculture you want to set us up with?
Boo.
Or just want to ask us a question? Then you can find us on Instagram at Subscurity Podcast. Our Twitter handle is at Subscurity Pod, and our website is subscurity.com. You can also email us directly at subscurity@gmail.com. Our intro and outro music is the instrumental of We're Better Together by Go Mordecai. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.